This is July 30th, questions and answers.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Such is the nature of life, that all it asks and all it wants is an opportunity to appear. You are that opportunity, and so am I. It is the purpose of this teaching to make us aware of this essential truth of our being. Now, as Andy said tonight, is questions and answers. We'll just recap a little for the month. This month was called Attitude. And what we learned about attitude was that attitude is one of the things that we can change. We can change many things in ourselves, and attitude is one of them. It's very hard to change anything on the outside of life, but we can change the inside of life. And when we change the inside of life, the outside of life changes. Because we're doing everything not only with attitude, we're doing it with perspective. And whatever our attitude and perspective is and our expectation is, that is what we are going to see on the outside of life. Because we always see with our mind. We do not see with our eyes. So if we keep our thinking working correctly, we'll see things differently. We all know that this is a wonderful world that we live in. We'll know that this is an abundant world that we live in. And we will also learn that what we think about, we bring about. And that is the main tenet of this teaching. Using your mind, you are able to bring into reality what you want. Into your reality. Not necessarily into somebody else's, but always into your reality. Because what you are thinking about, you are bringing about. So we're always monitoring our thinking. We are becoming witnesses to our own thinking. And when we think something that we don't like, we can change that. And we have to learn to do that for ourselves. Life is a do-it-yourself project, and it's an inside job. We are not taught this in school, and we are not taught this in most institutions and so forth. And then let me point out one other thing about this teaching. Although we call it religious science, it is a philosophy. Many people make it a religion. When we try to make it a religion, then we're right back to square one again, and we're starting to think, oh, we have to please this thing called God. You do not have to please God. What you have to please is yourself. God could care less. Now, I hate to say that because somebody will say, oh, yes, but God cares for me. God absolutely cares for you. But God doesn't care what you do. You have to be the one who cares what you do. Because you can't move this force. And if we start to worship God again and start to make it church-like again, and then we're right back to seeing God as some superhuman being somewhere in the sky. This thing that we call God, or we call the universe, which are one and the same thing, has nothing to do with a superhuman being. It has to do with a life force, an intelligence, a wisdom that is running through everything and running through each and every one of us. And it is our ability to use this so that our life becomes what we want it to become. So, by changing your attitude, you can change your life. We have the saying, change your mind, change your life. Well, that is absolutely true also. But I like to pinpoint that out, that this philosophy, and if you want to make it a religion, that's quite all right. But don't fall back into the faith of your fathers. Don't start to do that and think that God is up in heaven somewhere, entertaining his only begotten son, Jesus, and the Mary, the mother. I don't know who else is up there. There's St. Peter's at the gate and all that kind of stuff. But who else is up there looking down and doing all that stuff? I have no idea. That is absolutely a wonderful story. It's a myth. And it reads very well if you want to read that. But it is not the truth. And that is not what we are teaching. We are teaching that this thing called God is you. It is the thing itself. You are God. You are God in action. And we are getting closer and closer to that understanding, and we do that by raising up in consciousness so that we're able to think God thoughts after it. So that's what this teaching is about. So if you get into it with people who still think that God is a superhuman being, there's something wrong. God is not a superhuman being. God is a life force. God is intelligent. God is wisdom. And once you realize that, then you can get rid of all that. Because if you think God is a superhuman being, then you start to attach human qualities to God. And you say God gets angry, or God punishes, or God does this, that, and the other thing. No, people do that. Humans do that. God does not punish. Remember, God never sits in judgment upon itself through you. God does not do that type of thing. And God is absolutely beyond thoughts and words, because it's infinite, and we cannot explain or define infinity. When we start to define infinity or something that's infinite, we start to make it finite. And God is not finite. Our mind happens to be finite, but God's mind is infinite. So it's beyond thoughts and words. So, with that said, I'll open it up for questions and answers. You may ask me any question, metaphysical, please. But if you want to know the price of gas or something, I'll tell you.
What is the metaphysical definition of love?
What is the metaphysical definition of love? Well, love is synonymous with God. God is love. Love, when we talk of love, and this is something that we, with our finite minds, cannot quite grasp, because we talk about unconditional love. And when we say unconditional love, very few people have unconditional love, because everything's conditioned on something else. I will love you if you do this, if you go to bed early, if you eat your rice, if you do this, that, the other thing. We will love you. But if you carry on like that, we're not going to love you. And see, this thing called God loves you regardless. God doesn't say stop doing that. You have to say stop doing it. God is too polite to butt into your life. Help you. Love is the only reality that there is, by the way. And we're all searching for that reality. That's a truth, that's a reality. And we have to look through all the appearances on this plane of action to be able to discover love. Everything at the center is love. And we must find that love or that divinity. And that's what we're all about. The Master Teacher Jesus said, do not judge by appearances, because when we start to judge by appearances, we let love go right out the window. So what the reality that we are trying to accomplish here on this plane of action is this thing called love, where we love everything, where we love everything that is in front of us. You must learn to love everything that is in front of you, because there's nothing wrong with anything that's in front of you. You brought it there. You're projecting that, so you have to love it. Next question. Yeah? No?
Sure.
$10. Because I love to covet things.
Can you tell me the best way to do that?
The best way to covet something? Get interested in it, have a desire for it, and really want it.
That's it?
No.
There's no magic there?
No. When we do not use magic in this teaching.
I know. Hmm. No, but there's got to be more than just wanting it.
Yes, you have to want it, you have to desire it. You have to have a feeling for it. You have to hook it in your solar plexus.
How do you do that?
How do you hook it in your solar plexus? By getting interested. Or use a visualization. Throw a cord out there and hook it just like you would a fish and pull it in.
How do you reconcile the Buddhist idea of no desire with what you're talking about desiring? I mean, you're talking about desiring in terms of manifestation.
Yes, yes.
So how do you reconcile that? Is it just a semantics thing?
Yes, it is a semantics thing. And the Buddhists, of course, have moved up where they don't desire anything. And, of course, I will tell you that one of the highest, if you will use the word highest, forms of consciousness that you can have is a consciousness that desires nothing.
And
a consciousness that desires nothing. A consciousness that wants for nothing. But because of our finite mind, we still want things, we still desire things, and we still covet things. And there's nothing wrong with that, as long as it
So does that mean that you've manifested everything that you have desired in the past, or you're just not interested?
You're just not interested. You're just not interested. Everything is already there anyway. You know, we really don't need these things. We really don't need to desire things. Everything is there if you would just release all the things that you think are holding you from having what you want. It's all there. What do I mean by we have to release the jealousies? We have to release all these preconceived ideas that, you know, I must do this, this, and this, and turn around three times before I'm allowed to have something. Yeah. Come on, Scott.
Can you talk about the similarities between other Eastern religions, let's say like Taoism, metaphysics or religious science?
Well, yes, all of those are exactly the same because the central point of it is love, or the central point is the idea that we are all one. We're all one with the only life there is, the life of God. And that's what we are trying to teach. In Western religions, they teach, of course, that that is outside of you someplace, and they teach separations, where the Eastern religions always teach a unity, and that's what this teaching does. And this teaching, unity. And that's what this teaching through Ernest Holmes, you know, he's scoured or gleaned from all the major religions and so forth. He took all the best, and he discovered that the thread that runs through everything is this idea of unity, that we really are one with God, or that we are God. That's our little saying, all that I am is God, but I am not all that God is. And that's what the Eastern people believe. And they don't get into all the other stuff that we, Western mind, wants to get into. That's just the trappings of religion. It has nothing to do with religion.
How do you explain to someone who believes in duality that we are all united, and what affects someone in another country also has an effect on us?
Well, that's very hard to explain. They have to come to that conclusion on their own. Mm-hmm. But they feel separate, mm-hmm. you see. And they feel that they're the only ones out there, and that's their mind doing that to them, because the mind, your finite mind, your human mind, likes to keep you separated. It likes to tell you you're the only person that's ever had that thought, you're the only person that there is, and all the other minds are against you, and that is not the way it is. And this thing that when we say, because of collective consciousness, or race mind, we know perfectly well that when we are thinking something, we're doing it for everybody. Doesn't matter, because everything is now, but the mind of God doesn't know that somebody's in Europe thinking a thought. It just knows that a thought is being funk. So, it's a wonderful that wonderful thing. What's known in one spot in mind must be known in all places in mind. So, and that's why we hold all these people. There's only one, and that's one. There's only one out there, and that the oneness is what makes it. So when we say, oh, you're black or white or green, or you're Jewish and Catholic and all this, that's just separation, constant separation, and that's labeling. And we try not to get into labeling, you know. But we have a tendency to do that too, because we say we're religious scientists and you're a Catholic, so there, you know. So we just made that separation right there. It's all done with you and with what's going on in your mind, with what's going on in your thinking. So make it individual for yourself.
That just triggered something in my mind that I saw in the news this morning. A Baptist church, talk about practicing duality, and Baptist church in Mississippi refused to marry this couple in the church because they were black. This is a Baptist church. Mm-hmm.
That church is so far behind, and the Southern Baptist Church is so far behind, it's ridiculous. You know, every year they vote whether women are the ones who cause the sin. You see? And every year they vote yes. And then the women stay in that church, and they're the ones that go to that church, and they're the ones that give the money to that church. And every time the Baptists say, no, you're the one who caused all the trouble. Sort of stupid, but eventually maybe we will evolve past that. We're evolving and we're moving forward. I don't think in the next 2,000 years we can still have the Catholic Church and the Protestant churches and all these other things. It'll have to, you know, the buildings will be there, which is wonderful. But they'll be archaic, just like the Egyptian religions are today. We'll discover that there's this power, and that's all we're talking about here, is this power, the power of your mind, the power of your thinking, that you have power, that you are not a victim. And that's what we want to instill in people. You have power. And you have that power because you're allowed to think any thought that you want to think. You're also allowed not to think any thought that you don't want to think. You see? And people think they have to think some of these thoughts. These ugly, horrible thoughts. You don't have to think them. Tell them to go back to the nothingness from whence they came. Keep your mind clear and loving. You know, in the car, you can always tell. Remember, I tell you, get in a car and you'll find out how spiritual you are. If you're yelling and screaming at everyone for making all these dumb mistakes on the highway, you have an advanced spirituality. You know, I run around all day saying, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. You know, because they...
When we talk of God and we say God is spirit and God is love and mm-hmm. God is peace and beauty and all of these things that God mm-hmm. is, it's difficult for me to conceptualize that God loves me. How am I supposed to feel that? I'm supposed to just feel the beauty of life, the beauty of a tree and the ocean and all that is wonderful.
And that's your own self.
And my own wonderful self.
Yeah.
Okay.
has to start with you. You have to love yourself. You see, loving God will not help you. It may make you feel comfortable, may get you here, there, and everywhere, but it won't help you. What helps you is learning to love yourself.
So you're saying that the love is expressed through, it's really expressed through ourselves.
Yes. The whole idea, that's changing your attitude about who you are. Instead of, when I grew up, what were we were taught by the church? That we were worms, I think they used to say. You're lower than the worms or something, you know. And that's not true. So we have to change that attitude, and we have to start to like ourselves, you know. Well, I taught years ago people to do mirror work. How many people still do mirror work and look in the mirror and say, oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful me. Look at yourself. Take off all your clothes and look at yourself in the mirror. And say, oh, what a wonderful, magnificent creation I am. You have to do that.
What is your recommendation for dealing with techniques to help us love ourselves when we keep all this guilt and shame on ourselves?
Ah.
Funnel that from society, which is trying to shame us.
Yes. The first of all, the first step is recognizing it. That there is such a thing out there called shame and guilt that the world wants to put on you. And shame and guilt are man-made emotions. They're not real emotions. We use them to control people. We use them to make people feel bad. As soon as you think those thoughts or somebody's doing that to you, know right away that it's wrong and correct it. Do not accept that. Say, I'm not going to accept that. I was in the store the other day, and I was had a coupon or something, and the woman said, she was a child, she said, do you have your card? And I said, no, I don't have my card with me. She said, well, you can't use that. I said, oh, I most certainly can. I've done it before, and I want my 20% off. She said, no, you can't. I said, get the manager. She went to the manager, and I didn't see the manager. Came back and said, okay, we're going to let you use that card. But you were supposed to have that other card with you. I looked at her and I said, don't try to shame me. Don't do that. You see? You've got to stop people. You know? Now, she was just doing it. She had no idea. But why did she do that? Does anyone know why she did that? Because she had to be right. She had to be right. And that's the whole idea in life is, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And she wanted to be right. And she was, you know, she may have been 16 years old. And she's, you know, she better stop it now.
That's her power.
Yeah, it was exactly. You know, and I just look at him and say, don't, you know, don't try to shame me. You know, I don't need scolding at all. No. From a 16-year-old kid, I don't need it. I don't need it from anybody. So when some people try to do that, you have to stop them. The world loves to shame people. It loves to make you feel guilty and so forth. It's Madison Avenue, that's how they sell everything, through shame and guilt. Wonderful advertising technique for you to purchase things. There's no such thing as shame and guilt. Do not do that to yourself. You're wonderful human beings. You are the beloved in whom this thing that we call God is well pleased, or what we call the universe is very well pleased with us because we are one with it. So it is not shaming us at all. So why would we allow somebody else to shame us? We've been taught that to manipulate people, we use shame and guilt. And you see that constantly, and you read that constantly, and it's so ingrained and woven in to our culture that you have to look for it, you know, because most people hear it and they do not hear it. They do not pay any attention to it. They just let it go. I told you the story about being in my brother's church, which I'm sure is a Presbyterian church, but may not be. And they stand up at the beginning and say, I am unworthy. I said, well, I'm not going to say that. I don't believe I am unworthy. You know. And then, of course, they both say it. My sister-in-law and my brother both say, oh, no, we don't say that. I said, it's right there printed in the program. Oh, no, it's not. They don't see it. They're so used to it. See, we get so used to all those little things, and they're so into the fabric of everything that we have to pay attention and get rid of them, or we just carry it on to the next person. It's called a mind virus, by the way. And you don't want to pass that around to somebody else. If you have a cold, you don't want to pass that around. But mind viruses, we pass around constantly. Well, we don't want to do that to ourselves. Does that help you? But you're on the right road if you can catch it. If you notice what's going on, then stop it. Why would you want to buy into it? You know? Why would you want to buy into it? No.
I think a bad technique that I use is overcompensation. It turns it back around on oneself. It's dangerous.
Yes. So just say there's absolutely nothing wrong with me. I'm whole, complete, and perfect. You see? Because it got under you and got into your mind somehow, and you think, oh, there's a grain of truth in this somewhere. There's no grain of truth in it. There's no grain of truth. If somebody's trying to shame you or make you feel guilty, there is no... Your mind can go. You must stop your mind from saying, oh, yes, oh, yeah, I wasn't. Oh, yeah, I remember when I did that. Oh, 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 oh. That's gone. All that stuff is gone. That's in the past. Don't go back there. Don't go back there. No. And we form habits of thinking. And we must break those habits, especially if they're not serving us. You see, we're always punishing our own selves. There's no one else punishing you. If you think you're being punished, you're doing it. And you're doing it with your thinking.
Can you talk about discernment as it relates to like an abundance of opportunity? Where you cast so many seeds out there,
yes.
And things are blossoming in all directions,
yes.
And then it's kind of overwhelming.
Well, we'll get overwhelmed because we're always in a field of total possibilities. There's tons of possibilities out there. And you then must come to the conclusion, which one of these choices do I want? How do I want it to be? You know, the main question you always ask yourself is, what do I want?
Well, so let me ask this refinement of the question, because I feel like there's things that I set in motion that are coming into fruition now, but it's almost like they're outdated wishes.
Yes. So stop them.
But it's not like I'm under Space Invader attack. But it's just interesting because I can see the part of me that wanted that,
yes.
But it's not big enough
anymore. Right.
Like, not grand enough. Not that it's not, like,
yes.
You know,
because
$10 and...
Right. You moved on.
Yes.
And you've grown and you've stretched. And that when you put that out there, it was only this big.
Yes.
And your mind was only this big.
Yes.
Now your mind is this big.
Yes.
You see. So you say, oh, And then say, look how powerful I am. Mm-hmm. Well, I can do that. I can make the next one. I can get what I see. We're always evolving. We're always evolving. But it's stretching the consciousness that does it. Remember? Does everyone remember that? If you go to the well with a thimble, you can only fill that thimble full. You must go always to mind or to open as big as possible. So don't go to the well with a thimble. Most people are taught to be thankful for a thimbleful. That's a bunch of crap. No, we're taught to be satisfied with what you have. Be satisfied with this, that, and the other. We have what's called a divine urge with inside of us. And when you get that divine urge or that nudging, then you do something. You go past that. You do something about it. And you're thinking.
I was thinking of a quote I read recently. I think it was your purpose in life is for you. Your mission in life is for other people.
Oh yeah, bunch of shit.
Why?
Well, because it goes right back again, this thing of that constantly with Christianity and all these things, serve other people, serve other people. But unless you can serve yourself and you become something, you cannot help other people. That's the idea, the blind leading the blind. And all that stuff sounds absolutely wonderful. And it sounds, oh, boy, I have a purpose in life. My purpose in life is to serve other people. Well, I hate myself. I don't like this. I don't like that. But I'm going to serve other people.
That's what the quote said. The quote said, your purpose in life is for you. Your mission in life is for other people.
Yes. Your mission in life is for you. So tell me what you would do with that saying if the mission was for other people. You'd give up acting and go farm because that would help other people.
No. I think whatever you're called to do can serve other people. Like acting can serve other people.
No.
Storytelling is a very important part of our culture.
All right. But do it for yourself and the rest will fall into line. We always want to take ourselves out of the equation. We want to put it onto somebody else. We want to say, oh, I can help somebody else and then I'll feel better about myself. Feel better about yourself first. That's what happens with all these charity things and so forth. People want to, you know, they never work, you know. Do it for yourself. Do it. Always start with you. And then go out from there. Things will happen.
When people talk about the self-loathing Jew, are they referencing the Old Testament?
Yes.
And the idea of sin and turning it back on oneself that one is unworthy?
Well, yes. And that's a mindset that has been in the Jewish religion and the Jewish community for so long, and it's very difficult. And the talk about Jewish guilt, you know, they take on the troubles of all the world, and they have always been the scapegoats and so forth. So it's sort of built into them, you know. And you have to learn to get out of that. That is not true. All that stuff. But they've been punished for so long. If you punish somebody for so long, they start to think that they deserve it. And they don't. There's no such thing as deserving punishment. Or that this, you know.
Is it partially an overthinking some of the tenets of the Bible?
Well, it's not only overthinking, it becomes a badge of courage then. Say, and that's the main thing in That becomes the main thing in the religion, the main thing in the person, you see. And it's not the main thing that's going on. But many Jewish people think, oh, we have to suffer, we have to do this. And you don't. You don't have to suffer. Now, they have suffered throughout the centuries. But there's no need for that at all. There's no need for that. So here again, we have to boil down to loving yourself. Love yourself enough not to put up with that, you see. Don't put up with that. I think it's so funny that the Jewish religion or the Jewish people have all this suffering going on, and they have suffered a great deal, but they've also produced the most wonderful things, more so than any other group. I think there were more geniuses, more intelligent people, artists, musicians, all of that came out of that. So why don't we draw on all that beauty instead of the other stuff? Yeah. So you have a whole book there and you didn't ask but one question.
Wise words.
Yes, well, I know they're wise words, but you certainly need clarification on something. Yeah.
How is it that a person can manifest negative stuff and not positive stuff?
Because it's a habit.
It's
an absolute habit of thinking. And it's easier to do negativity than it is to do a positive thing. Just falls into place. Yes.
What do you mean?
Meaning it falls into place. The mind takes the road of least resistance, and you've been thinking negative thoughts for so long that you just keep right on thinking them. So there's a groove in your mind someplace, and all that stuff just gets in that groove, and you can't knock it out. Did I told you about that? Think of the old pinball machine and so forth. When you wanted the ball to get out of something, what'd you do? You hit it. You know, tilt. Just hit yourself and say, get out of there. That stop it.
Is it easier for most people to manifest negative? Or
yes. No. Most people.
What's that book you gave us?
So, for a couple of weeks I was wearing
Kambala.
I didn't have a rubber band, so I had a ponytail thing.
Oh, you kept snapping it?
I wore it so much it was itching. I had to take it off.
Well, at least you didn't grow a tail.
It helped.
Yeah, well, it helps, yes. The rubber band helps if you snap it. You have to. The whole idea is that we have to figure out what our mind is doing to us, and it does things so quickly and so fast, and acts out of the past that we fail to catch it in time. During the day, I think I'm doing all right. I'm doing all this is just, oh, Dallas, you're really growing. You're really growing. Then at nighttime, I start to settle down, and I say, oh, my God, look, you did this, you did that. This was wrong. This is wrong. So when I sit in, I take my inventory, and I say, now I'm not going to do that. Again, I'm going to learn from it, and mind, slow down. Do not throw these things at me so quickly. Because, see, we just respond, and we respond the way we did when we were 5 years old.
What's the name of the little book that you gave us? You replaced one idea with another.
Oh, the mental equivalent.
Mental equivalent.
Yes. By Emmett Fox, the best little booklet in the world, by the way, sums up this whole teaching and this whole idea that your mind is powerful. and that it's your thoughts that are causing your life. Your thoughts are causing everything. So we learn to change those thoughts. Sometimes it's not as easy as we would like it to be. But if we become aware, if we start to notice what we are doing, we can change it. So notice when you're entertaining that negativity and so forth, and say, oh, I'm negative again, I'm going to change it. You see, that's the most wonderful thing in the whole this whole philosophy, that you can change negativity, that nothing is set in concrete, that your personality can change, that all this stuff inside of you can change. You have to work on it a little bit for it to be able to do that. All the qualities that we give God, beauty, love, and all that, are inside of us. So why aren't we drawing forth those ideas instead of drawing forth human things? You see? And we have that horrible expression, well, I'm just human. Well, you're so much more than human. Why do you want to do that to yourself? I'm just human. Well, you are human, yes. But you're so much more than that. Why do you stop there? You can think like a human. I can get all angry and mad, and I can hate people and do all that kind of stuff, but I choose not to. I have the capacity to be able to do that. So if I have the capacity to be able to do that, I also have the capacity to think God's thoughts after it, and to see love and beauty and understanding and compassion, which makes you feel so much better. See, my whole idea in life is to go through life feeling good. I went through many years not feeling good. I don't want that again. You know, I was living life like everybody else. Mean, hateful, spiteful, bitter person. No way to do it. So there. All right, Scott, come up with a question.
How do you stay in, we haven't really talked about this in a while, but it's always kind of fascinating to me, the idea of just staying in the moment. And not like a lot of people are, we live in their past. I don't do that, but I'm always thinking of the future, which is just still not living in the moment. I'm like thinking in the future.
Yeah, because you missed your life if you're doing that.
Right.
So, well, bring yourself back to the moment. How do you bring yourself back to the moment?
Exactly. How do I?
You're sitting on that chair. Grab the arms of the chair, and feel the arms of the chair, and think, I'm here, right now. The idea is to always bring your mind back to your body. And we let our mind go someplace else. Bring your mind back to your body. And you can do that very simply by grabbing a hold of the arms of the chair and say, oh, here's where I am now, and I'm going to stay here. Help you. That's all you have to do, or your steering wheel, or in your car when you're doing it. You have to... Because our mind loves to take flights of fancy. It loves to take us someplace else. And then we miss the whole thing. Remember? And that was fun at one time in my life. I loved to take flights of fancy, but I don't do that anymore. Thinking.
I was thinking about if feeling good is one of the best goals that you can have, then I was thinking about like taking trips to good things in the past or fantasies in the future is actually a very positive thing.
No. Because you're not in the now.
But you're happy.
But you're not, your whole life goes by and you're not living in the now. You haven't lived. You've lived in some place that doesn't exist. The past does not exist. the future does not exist. Only this moment exists. What are you thinking in this moment? Make this moment happy. Make this a happy thought.
But if we're creating our own reality with our minds and that is that happiness, why can't we be thinking about happy things of the future or things in this moment?
Because it doesn't exist.
In our mind it does.
It's a trick of the mind. It does not exist at all.
But if we're creating our reality with our minds, then it exists.
Only the reality of the now. You're thinking in the past. It's not. It's creating something that's already been done. It's like eating yesterday's leftovers. And the future is not here yet. So you have to think only in this moment and be happy in this moment, you see. Because if you're thinking of the future, then you're going to postpone your happiness. And it's a little trick of the mind. It's one of the loopholes that the mind loves to give to you. You can be, you know, you can sit there for the rest of your life, be happy with all the thoughts of the past and so forth, go down memory lane and all, but you just missed half your life. It's done. Remember in the Bible it says, let the dead bury the dead. It's done. It's dead. There's no life in it.
But that doesn't mean that you don't plan for the future, right?
Doesn't mean that you don't plan for the future.
Because if you go to college, you're
yes.
planning for the future. You know that
yes.
you're going to graduate.
Yes.
Years.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that at all.
No.
It just means that you have to focus. On today.
Yes.
On the right now.
That future you're thinking about will become the now.
Well, so is there a distinction based on what Andy was asking about? Having a thought that elevates your present state, even if it's pulling from the past, but just not dwelling there.
Yes.
Like kind of a stepping stone. Like I'm kind of feeling crappy, and so I think about my dog Sparky growing up, and then I'm like lifted,
yeah.
but then I don't need to be like spending 20 minutes thinking about Sparky.
Yes. That will work.
My actual dog's name was Sparky.
That will work. Because it's all thoughts. It's thoughts that's doing it. But we want to learn to stay in the present moment. And we're not taught to do that. And we're taught to think about the future. And we're taught to reminisce the past, you know. Let's go to a sock hop, you know. I've been to sock hops. I don't need another sock hop.
I think a lot of people like that. Because it brings to mind simpler.
Yes.
And less complicated, whether that's actually true or not.
Yes. We don't know, do we? See, the mind is very faulty. The mind is very faulty. You think, oh, boy, when I was that age, everything was rosy and wonderful. Well, it wasn't. Only the now. Think of this moment and do something with it. You can't have anything in the past, you can't have anything in the future. You can only have something in the now. And if you have bad memories, change those. That's a wonderful technique. What do you want to bring up a bad memory for? I just don't have any bad memories. I got rid of those years ago. They don't serve me. You know, you ever sit down with people and they tell you all the woes of the past? Who wants to hear that? Not me. I like when people say, do you remember? I say, no. I know.
Don't want to.
Yeah. Who wants to remember? I want to be here in this moment. We talk about it all the time. We talk about the moment. We talk about now. is where all the power is and so forth, and then we don't want to live in it. Rose is great with that. She has a wonderful expression. Do you know what her expression is? What was. Nothing you can do about it. Yeah. And it may not have been hunky dory, but there it was. And I guess the other thing that we forget, you know, you can't think in the past and you can't think in the future. You can only think in the now. You can only think in the now. The other thing that people always fail to remember is you can only think one thought at a time. Although the mind and you think, oh, I'm thinking all these thoughts. You're not thinking all those thoughts. You can only ever think one thought at a time. But the mind likes to tell you, oh, all that's going on in there. Oh, my God, the thought. Oh. No, you can only ever think one thought at a time. Try to think two thoughts at once. You can't. You can only think one thought at a time. So pick the thought that you want to think. Pick the thought that you want to think. It's all done with controlling your thinking. And not allowing it to control you. And we allow our minds to control us. We always are failing to remember that we are not our minds. Our minds are ours to use. But the mind likes to tell you that that is not true. But it is true. How many people have you heard say, my mind is driving me crazy? Your mind's not driving you crazy. You're driving yourself crazy. Stop thinking those thoughts. Stop doing it to yourself. It becomes easier and easier and easier as you practice to do that. Or maybe it comes with age. I don't know. But I think, oh, that's really just my thinking.
Are you saying that changing our mind is just a process of us saying no, of stopping?
Yes.
Are you advocating positive affirmation? I mean, what other techniques? Because we're given the idea of victimhood from the very beginning.
Yes.
And so, and then to intellectualize the media, you know, we're made to fear so that they can sell.
Correct.
So it's a continuous struggle of trying to throw off this idea of victimhood.
Yes.
And we're constantly, you know, there's this constant onslaught of fear-inducing media.
Right.
I mean, I know you say don't listen to the media, but, you know, we're also those of us who make our livings in it, you know, have to stay abreast to whatever point, you know, so that we can effectively do our jobs. So I guess I'm asking, what other techniques do you suggest?
You have to come to the conclusion that there's not a damn word of truth in it. Yes, all that's going on is an absolute reality, and it's a movie running. But there's not a damn word of truth in it. But you start to internalize all that stuff when you think, oh, that is true. It's not true. None of that stuff's true.
And what you mean by that is that the news points out negative stories.
Yes.
And that's because it's all we hear are negative stories.
Yes.
We interpolate that to mean the world is completely negative and filled
Absolutely.
With these stories, where those are the exceptions.
Yes.
As opposed to the rule.
They are the 5% of what's going on. And the 95% of what's going on is completely ignored. So you must go to the 95%. Remember, Raymond Charles Barker used to read the New York Times from front to back. And when he was finished with it, he would slap his hand and say, not a damn word of truth in it. Oh, there's very little truth in the news. Very. And usually none whatsoever. It's manufactured. And it's done to sell things. And it's done to make something spectacular. So that you're, oh, I'm in shock. I'm in awe over that. Well, when it boils down to, you know, it's not as fantastic as they put it out to be. But if you're in that industry, yes, you have to stay abreast of that, but you can't buy into it and say this is real. So you have to be able to separate yourself from that. You know, you have to detach from that stuff and not get sucked in. And that's what happens. We get sucked into all these things and then we think, oh, that's really what's going on, and that's not what's going on. So, if 5% of what we hear on the television, on the news, in the newspapers, and all this kind of stuff, we build up to be, oh, that's the way it is everywhere. You say, all over the world, that's all that's going on. That's not all that's going on. There's wonderful things going on. There's 95% wonderful things going on. Why don't we hear that? They tried a news program, you know, it was only going to give good news. It didn't work. No one wanted to listen to it. We love to hear sad stories. We love to hear drama. We love to hear all that kind of stuff because it makes us feel superior. Didn't happen to me. Ha ha ha. Boy, am I glad that tornado took that trailer park and not my house. Don't listen to that stuff. I haven't listened to the news in years. I have never subscribed to a newspaper. They call me, you know, for the LA Times. I'd love to do it to them. Would you like to? Well, I told you, no, I don't read. They are. I don't want to read that stuff. If you can read it and it doesn't affect you, fine. But you see, what happens is it affects you. You cannot separate from it. You have to become detached. Same way you have to detach yourself from your own mind, from your own thinking, and become a witness to your thinking so that you can look at it. When bad thoughts come across, put them out on the screen. When something is out there, look at it and say, oh, that doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I don't like that thought. Hit the delete button and let a new thought come in, a thought that you want to do, the one that you're generating instead of the mass media, or this thing called race mind. And that's, race mind is very convincing. The world is very convincing. Most people will never get out of it. See, we're all in psychic sleep, by the way. That's a topic for another night. We are hypnotized by the world. Any other questions? You know the truth. What do we say? Know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So what is the truth? The truth is that there is a power in this universe, and there is a power for good in this universe, and you are one with that power, and that you can use that power to bring into your life what you want. And it's wonderful. And so are you, and so am I. And there ends the lesson. Thank you.